Welcome to another episode with Joe Morrison. We had him on the first episode and he was an absolute delight. Far more interesting than... His answers were far more interesting than the questions, which was how it was supposed to be. But it went all over the place. We had a document that we had made, which we've thrown out of the window. just like United threw David Moyes out of the window after 8 months. Yeah. See, David Moyes took that United job for granted, right? But there was a couple of things that Joe, you touched upon when we're talking about Newcastle and how it is not going to be another Manchester City. But I'm going to stay with Manchester City because you spoke about financial fair play and there's a question there. Are they going to be out of the Champions League next season? Or let me put it in a better way. Does United have a chance to play Champions League next season?
Which is the more important question to you? I think they won't, number one. And I'll tell you why in a second. I don't think they'll be out of the Champions League. I think they're more likely to get a very big fine, a hefty penalty, financial penalty. And I'll tell you why. There's a lot of murmurings bubbling around Europe right now about a breakaway European Super League.
Yes.
One thing that, and I mentioned this briefly in episode one, if fans want to know what's going on in football, you really need to spend a lot more time looking at the business of football, reading articles about the business of football, following people on social media who are involved in the business of football. And that gives you a better understanding of not only your club, but what's going on. Now, football clubs the world over, and always have been since the beginning of time, are cash-hungry monsters. Cash-hungry monsters. The more cash you give them, the more cash they need and they want. Now, it gets to a point where it's just unsustainable. So we've kind of reached that point a little bit at the moment with the current situation. Where does most money come from? It comes from TV broadcasters around the world. How can... Now, football clubs, many of them are in debt, huge debts. Barcelona's got $500 million debt. Real Madrid's got $500 million debt. Manchester United's got $500 million debt. So a lot of the revenue that they make, when you go and look at their revenues, and in particular their net profits, the net profits are very, very small of football clubs in comparison to their revenues, primarily because their wage bills make up such a huge percentage of the costs of a club, for obvious reasons. You know, you have to pay players a lot of money. So coming back to your question about Manchester City, the Manchester Cities of this world and the Real Madrids, and I'll come to Real Madrid in a second, they are so powerful now that if UEFA don't play the game, they have the power to go and say, we're going to set up our own league. And let me tell you, if someone came along with the right amount of money, Real Madrid would walk tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Not today, tomorrow.
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Perez during his time at Real Madrid one of the first proponents of the European Super League?
He still is, right? And to put this into context, when all of the La Liga directors, the representatives of every club in La Liga, came over to Delhi last year, I had to go over to Delhi and be part of this interaction with them. So to give them a bit of an exposure to, you know, potential opportunities and partnerships in the Indian subcontinent. Every club was represented except for Real Madrid. So Real Madrid and Perez, has he made a secret of this? He keeps denying it, but it's one of those, you know, with a twinkle in his eye, I didn't say that. Perez, he realizes that the, you know, clubs are cash hungry monsters. And if you want to pay players more and get the best talent, you need to keep that cash coming in. Now that cash has a finite limit at the moment because it comes from predominantly TV revenue. Now, how do you increase the TV revenue? Well, the Premier League, La Liga, Champions League, they've kept going to broadcasters over every rights cycle and saying, give us more money. Our product's amazing. The Premier League is the biggest league in the world. Give us more money. La Liga is getting better and better. Give us more money. Well, what's happened of late is the broadcasters have started looking at their data a lot more and saying, you know what? Our advertising revenues aren't jumping in the same way the costs of the leagues are jumping every right cycle. So we need to just be a little bit more careful. Our subscriptions aren't going through the roof and heading to the moon like they were back in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
The last Premier League rights deal domestically went down for the first time in its history. So international revenue went up a little bit, which compensated for the domestic rights going down. And Sky, you know, the money that's coming in from the Premier League for Sky subscriptions, I'm talking about, is just not what it was. So there's a, do you understand what I'm saying? There's a bit of a plateau coming now.
Yep.
So UEFA have to be very, very careful as to how they play this out because they cannot alienate the clubs. Now, I think UEFA have their own plans of world domination, just like FIFA and Infantino has his plan of world domination. And FIFA and Infantino is this shadow that's lurking in the background. He realizes that the future of FIFA cannot be built on the revenue and money generated just from the World Cup every 4 years. They get $2 billion into their pocket every 4 years, and then they make virtually no money in the intervening years. So he realizes that something else has to happen. That's why he wants to revamp the Club World Cup. He wants to turn it into a tournament. Now, if UEFA f*** it up with the clubs, FIFA will step in and say, hey, come, we'll create a league, we'll get the broadcaster, we'll do this. If you're not happy with your domestic leagues. Now, I'm sorry to say, when I first started broadcasting to Asia, you know, fans cared about Liverpool playing a Bournemouth or Manchester United playing a Portsmouth. Now they don't. Now they don't give a shit. They only want to see Man United, Liverpool, Liverpool, Chelsea, Chelsea, Juventus, Real Madrid against Arsenal. You know, that's the games that people want to see now. The best players on the planet playing off against other best players in the planet. That's the way it's going. So it's a real tricky one to answer your question about Manchester City. If Manchester City got a 2-year ban from European football, I guarantee you, behind the scenes, not publicly, I guarantee you, they'll be going and talking to the likes of Perez and Juventus, another club struggling financially at the moment. You know, look at what Juventus have done. If you're a fan of Juventus or you follow Italian football, they've been the most phenomenal team over the last 10 years. They keep winning the league. Right. Now, how do you feel about Juventus? If you're not a hardcore Juventus fan, how do you feel? You're bored. Yeah, they're going to win it again. Yeah, they're going to win it again. Paris Saint-Germain. Yeah, they're going to win the league again. It becomes boring. You lose that appetite for it. You get too much candy. You get sick and you don't want it anymore. So what's the next step for Juventus's and PSG's and Real Madrid's and Barcelona's of this world? In their minds, this is not what I'm advocating, I'm just saying in their minds, they go, let's play against each other every single week. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine?
That sounds great. If you ask me, I think that sounds really good. I'm all that Super League.
So the European Super League looks like not so much of a distant possibility. Shiva, actually, you would like this. In 2009 or 10 sometime, Arsene Wenger had said in the next 10 years, the kind of financial troubles or responsibility or pressures that football clubs would get into, there is no way you can stop this Super League, all the top teams from, you know top leagues coming together and having their own leagues. And it's clear, I think, at least in the English Premier League, with clubs like Leicester and Everton and West Ham and Spurs and now Newcastle getting the new money, I'm sure they'll increase their fan base and the clubs at top, who I hope our clubs also are part of that.
But here's the problem. Somebody has to be left behind. Now, I'm a Newcastle fan, as you know. I'm an old football romantic. I still believe in the FA Cup and the cup final day and all that. It just doesn't work from a business model perspective nowadays. And Newcastle are one of those clubs that, if this Saudi thing doesn't go through, could be left behind. People keep coming up with, and this is where Budgie's right, and don't tell him, I just hope he never watches this. This is where Budgie's right. Everyone keeps reinventing the football model, but the football model has not changed since its inception. The best players win you the titles. It's as simple as that. And to get the best players, you have to pay the best wages. So nothing's changed.
And to pay
the best wages, you've got to get the best money. You know, Liverpool and Manchester United in the 70s and the 80s were the ones who had the most money. That's why they were the clubs that won everything, because they could buy the best players from other clubs you know, my team in the 1980s, Newcastle United, we had such a geographical pool of talent. Peter Beardsley was a Geordie, Paul Gascoigne, Chris Waddle. I mean, you could, you know, and look at the Northeast. Steve Bruce is from the Northeast. Yeah. So Bobby Robson, going way before that, was from the Northeast. Brian Robson is from the Northeast of England. You know, absolute legends. Bobby Charlton, both the Charlton brothers, Bobby and Jack Charlton, all came from a sort of 50-mile radius. Yeah. Why does Bobby Charlton not associated with a stellar long-term career at Newcastle United, or Gazza, or Chris Waddle, or Steve Bruce, or Brian Robson? Because we couldn't afford to keep them. They went to the big clubs because they got the big wages and the big monies, and Newcastle was in such financial straits in those days that they had to sell a player every year, a bit like Atletico Madrid for a while. They had to sell their top player every year to get enough money in to pay for all of the costs. So nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed is the zeros involved in the millions or billions, as it is now, have just got longer. There's now more zeros. The players' wages have more zeros on the end. The cost of transfers have more zeros. The cost of owning a football club has more zeros. That's the only thing that's changed. Everything else is the same.
Yeah, no, you bring me to a good point by saying so many zeros. There are a total zero number of people on the board of Barcelona right now. what has gone wrong there? Are we looking at it breaking down and going to struggle for the next few years? Is Lionel Messi still going to be an integral part of the club? What do you think is happening with Barcelona, and where do we see them?
The relationship and the trust between Lionel Messi and the board has definitely broken down, without a question of a doubt. And you know what this reminds me of a little bit? It reminds me of the final sort of few months of Cristiano Ronaldo at Real Madrid. You know, that relationship kind of broke a little bit, and Cristiano Ronaldo didn't feel he was valued enough and just went, that's it, I'm out of here. So, and I kind of feel Lionel Messi's getting to that stage as well with Barcelona. You got to remember, elite players, everyone thinks elite players are obsessed about their image or their bank balance. Well, Cristiano is obsessed about his image.
I was just going to say that. That's exactly right.
but no, they are winners. That's why they got to where they are. And do you think Lionel Messi wants to be knocked out of the Champions League at the round of 16 or the quarterfinals every year? No, no. For a player at Atletico Madrid, that might be fine because, you know, oh my God, we got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, then we lost. They're a different level. They're a different breed of mentality. Lionel Messi has a belief, and I mean a deep belief, at the start of every Champions League season or the start of every La Liga season, that he and his team will be top. So if you start going through a period where they're not, and for those guys, it's still about winning the Champions League. If you go through a period that they're not, which Barcelona haven't won the Champions League in a few years, all of a sudden they start going, why am I here? Top players want to be surrounded by other top players. And Barcelona's recruitment policy over recent seasons has been poor, really poor.
There's a fracture there.
There's definitely a fracture.
Well, the bad transfers gone bad at Barcelona could be like a three-part episode by itself. Mm. But, I want to move to what I promised at the start of the episode, we spoke about the best players, and I want to talk about the best person that has ever sat on a panel, which is Budgie. And, you know, in one of the previous episodes, we were talking to Manas Guerra, and Karthik made a very interesting point saying that, you know, when Budgie, we started watching Budgie on television, people thought it's a lot of drama, and he doesn't know what he's saying. But I think over a period of time, people have started to understand and enjoy that persona. And the way you guys take each other's mickey all the time, it's novel for us to see that. Not that we don't love, serious sit down, suit boot, all nice shows to understand. But yes, like I said, it's a breath of fresh air, and it's great the way you and Budgie, have that chemistry between the both of you. Tell us more. How did this team of being very jovial came through, and any more experiences that you can share about this time that you spent together?
It's a great question, and the answer is probably not what most people think it is. I am heavily involved and usually have the final say on guests. And what has happened, especially in the last 10 years of my career, probably a little bit less, maybe the last sort of 7 years of my career, is when I started my broadcasting career, and if you go back to the UK as an example, when Sky Sports did their live Monday Night Football or the live broadcasts of the weekend, you could not get the team lineup anywhere else because the internet was in its infancy. There wasn't many websites. There certainly weren't any betting websites in those days. You know, and betting websites are usually the ones who have the team first. So if you wanted information on who was injured, who was in, who was out, you had to watch the pre-show of every game. That's changed. I know more about what's going on with players, lineup, injuries, gossip, before we go live than when we are live, as do the audience. They know more about what's going on ahead of this game, all of the rumors and suggestions because of social media in particular. They know what's going on before we even go live. So that's when I shifted my focus. And this is really important because I am heavily, heavily involved. It's almost like, well, it is, and it's an obsession. My executive producer thinks I am obsessed about it. I'm obsessed about formats, content, and the audience. I really am obsessed about it. I watch shows, and I look at data, and I look at other shows, and I work out, you know, why does this part of, and I'm not just talking about sports shows, by the way. I watch business shows in America and Australia. Like, why do they do that? Why does that get a reaction and engagement? Why does that not? Why does that look good? Why does that look bad? So, you know, you steal ideas from lots of little pieces and places. So coming back to the budgie thing, one of the things, as we mentioned in episode one about the Twitter experience, was when Budgie was on, he was polarizing. And this was before Trump and Piers Morgan, by the way. So, and people have to understand Donald Trump won an election through polarization. That's how powerful polarization is. And why is it important? It's important because what happened, Donald Trump running for the US election, and there's a number of documentaries out there, so you can go watch them. I'm not going to get into Donald Trump. But they used a software of which we have our own version of it, you know, now, which collects data and, you know, tells us audience patterns and how many people are watching at any particular point in time and how long they're watching for, etc. Donald Trump, when he was giving town hall speeches in his election campaign, they had their own version of the software, which said when he talked about building a wall and kicking the Mexicans out, it got a spike in support and interest. So at the beginning of his speeches and his campaign, he was appealing to both sides of the divide. Then they discovered if he became polarizing, he could just forget about those who were never going to vote for him anyway and appeal to them. Forget them. Half the world hates you and half the world loves you. So just get used to it. And that applies to anybody in life. Me, you guys, everyone who's watching this. So just get on with it. Spend more time with the people who love you. Spend less time with the people who hate you and that you hate. So just move on with your life. So Budgie is polarizing. He says the things that no matter if you're at home watching a game with two or three of your friends or you're in a bar, there's always one member of the group will say the things that Budgie says. Now, Budgie doesn't say it for effect, and that's the difference. And I'll keep coming back to this, and we mentioned it at the beginning of episode one, authenticity. Budgie really believes that Jose Mourinho is a fraud. And he believes Jose Mourinho is a fraud because every success that he has had in terms of trophies has been built on the back of money. So it's a valid point. You might disagree with it and say he's a successful manager because he's won the Champions League and he's won the leagues in the Premier League and he's won it in Italy and he's won it in Spain. That does not stop Budgie from having what is a valid opinion. You might disagree with it, but it's a valid opinion, isn't it?
So that is the difference between a subjective and an objective opinion.
Exactly. And you've hit the nail on the head. And that is where the formulaic design of our pre-show is so important. Because we cannot give first information about the team lineup anymore, what's the point? So that's why I've moved the emphasis of the show, the pre-show I'm talking about. Halftime and full-time is still the same. It's still serious, analytical. But pre-show, if you are not entertaining the audience, you should not be on air.
That's amazing.
It's as simple as that. And I say this when anyone asks me the question, to be a TV personality, first of all, you've got to have a personality. You can't be bland. You can't sit on the fence. And you know what is rather ironic about all this? When the BBC was great at training us, we were always going on training courses. And one of the things they taught us in one of the many training events at the beginning of my career was, as a presenter, as an anchor, you have to stay neutral. Now, that was correct for that time. Now it's not correct anymore. The audience wants to know what Joe Morrison thinks. So I have to start moving either side of the divide. The difference is that Budgie might be on this side and Kevin might be on that side. What I do is I try and formulate my opinion based on who has the better argument or who I support, and I move one way or the other during the course of the show. So so do not for 1 minute think that this is just all, yeah, that's just the way, you know, the dominoes fall. It's not at all. I think very, very deeply about, so to give you an example, when I'm formatting a show and discussing what we're going to talk about, before the Facebook project, all I would think about are what are the most important topics to in the build-up to this game, who's injured, et cetera, et cetera. Now, with Facebook, because we have this data that shows the engagement and shows who's responding and why they're responding, I have to now work out a format for the pre-show of topics that will generate the most reaction. And that's what Piers Morgan's doing. That's what Donald Trump's doing. You can type away. When people get angry with Piers Morgan, they're boiling their blood. And what do they do? Get on their laptop or their iPad and start sending a message saying, Piers Morgan, you're a dick and I totally disagree with you. Mm-hmm. Does he care? No. But what has happened? He has got 50,000 responses, and that shows in the data. And that's what companies and broadcasters want to know. If you are not generating a reaction, you may as well not be on air. And unfortunately, the traditional style of TV broadcasting in terms of pre-show is just bland, boring, blah, 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 blah. Even the seating positions, even the seating positions are really important to me, because physical interaction is vital to the chemistry of the argument and the debate, and then the debate leads on to the reaction, and the reaction leads on to the engagement.
I like how you said to be a TV personality, first you have to have a personality. I have something similar.
Don't go into this subject.
I have something similar because I really want to double click on that. I heard, and this sticks with me, to be a philosopher king, first you have to be king, and then you can start with philosophy. So tell us more. How did you arrive at, I'm pretty sure you have an example right at the tip of your tongue, of a TV personality with no personality.
You have to name names, don't you?
Of course, we have to sell this newspaper, don't we?
I'm seeing, and I'll tell you why I'm seeing more and more that don't have a personality. Because as social media platforms develop, they're being found out. You know, what we do in TV land, right, this false TV land, as you can see here, I've got no makeup, you know, looking probably older than I am, and all the rest of it.
You look wonderful, Joe.
Thank you very much. It's very polished. What you say is very polished. I'm still amazed to this day how many anchors use autocue. Gary Lineker has autocue for his jokes and his asides.
Really?
And you're like, so where's the authenticity? Authenticity comes on social media from spontaneity. So, you know, this stuff goes viral on a regular basis now that is like someone has hammed it up. They try to be funny, and it just doesn't catch fire. And then someone else, just by pure accident, why does one thing go viral and the other thing doesn't? And this is one of the biggest, biggest lessons I've learned from this Facebook challenge. And my boss, a woman called Melissa, she's absolutely brilliant, by the way. I've learned so much from her. She banged on at the beginning a lot to me about authenticity. Don't fake it. If you're wrong, you're wrong. If you look like an idiot, you look like an idiot. If you're funny, you're funny. Do not try and be funny. Do not try and be angry. Do not try and be an idiot. Do not try and be clever. Sometimes, you know, we all wake up with different personalities every day of the week, every week of the year, you know. One day you're feeling pretty smart and things are just, you know, flying out your brain. Other days you're like a zombie. That's just life. Mm-hmm. So be authentic. And coming back to Budgie, that's why that is really important, because we have other guests on and have had other guests on over the course of my career who, because they're still ambassadors at clubs, they don't want to say anything bad about the club. They don't want to criticize anyone. Well, what's the point of you being there?
Yeah.
There's been a big explosion in journalists going on to shows. Now, that's for two reasons. One is cost, yeah? Journalists do it for free.
Yeah.
Or for next to nothing. But the other reason as well is journalists will give you the gossip and the rumors or give you their opinion. So now players as pundits, an audience has two options. A journalist who's going to give me all of the gossip and the inside knowledge of what's happening at their football club, or a player, an ex-player, who's going to tell me nothing, is just going to give me bland technical.
Yeah.
What would you rather watch?
Yeah, I would probably watch Joe's show because I love this. This is exact. This feels like we're on a C2K episode back in the day.
Thank you very much. One thing, we're not fake. We're not fake. When I'm exasperated with Budgie, I'm genuinely exasperated with him.
No, that comes through for sure. That comes through, Joe.
And he does at times piss me off, and Kevin does at times piss me off. But we have a deep trust amongst each other, just in chemistry, because we work together a lot. So it's when one of us pisses another one off, it only lasts for a very short period, and then it's over and done with. So it's like a family. You know, you might get angry at your sister, or you fall out with your brother, or your parents, or whatever. Do you not love them anymore?
We say in football, it stays on the field and we get over it and then we go get a beer.
Correct. It's the same as we were talking about the Lee Bowyer, Kieran Dyer thing. Like,
yeah. They
haven't become enemies for the rest of their lives because of the on-field incident. It just happened, So, yeah. So Budgie is really important. So what I tried to bring to the show was someone who is a little bit spicy, and is going to garner that reaction, and someone who is more analytical of the game. And Kevin is very analytical, so he brings mm-hmm. that. He's not as spicy as Budgie. Kevin can't fire a polarizing debate as good as Budgie can, but Budgie is very, very good at analyzing a game, by the way, but he's not the greatest in elaborating, He's not as good at getting that out. Gary Neville is the best. All football players I know are pretty good at analysing a game, but they can't put that across to the audience in a simplistic way.
Also, I'm guessing players are restricted by how much they can say, especially when you spoke about Gary Neville or Jamie Carragher, who've been considered legends, or also have been legends for their own clubs and fans. I'm sure they can only speak so much in detail and can't really give out a lot of things as other people would do.
Well, first of all, Jamie Carragher is not that great, in my opinion. I'll tell you why. On Monday Night Football, about one in every five shows, Gary Neville steps off and takes a night off, and they put someone opposite Jamie Carragher. And this comes back to the Budgie Kevin, Budgie Carlton thing. Mm-hmm. When you remove Gary Neville from that equation, there's not that same juice there. There's not that same chemistry spice there. So it just goes to show you put someone different opposite Gary Neville, he can still fire the conversation. There's very few pundits that can do that. Roy Keane can, Jamie Carragher can't. So the thing about it is, if you are being honest in your opinion, no one can ever challenge you on that. If you firmly believe that, then what is wrong with that? If Gary Neville firmly believes that Ed Woodward is making a mess of the recruitment side of the club, Ed Woodward will pick the phone up to him and go, "Why did you say that, Gary? Who cares?" He doesn't care. It's like, it's very, very difficult nowadays. I'm lucky because obviously I'm involved in Indian football and have been for a lot of years. You'd be amazed about how many people are gagged in Indian football. And I'm not just talking about players and all the rest of it, which you can understand. I'm talking about those who broadcast as well. Why? Because someone will pick up the phone and go, "You see this presenter or this reporter or this anchor? He works for you. I want him fired. And if you don't tell him to shut up or keep his mouth shut or don't say anything about this situation, this political shit situation, then threaten him with his job." No one can do that to me. You know what I'm saying? I'm a freelancer. I don't care if I never work for in football broadcasting again. I've had a great career. I've had a great life. I've had great experiences. I've traveled the world. I'm done. If I was at the beginning of my career, it'd be slightly different. I'd be a little bit more worried. But I'm not. So I can be more authentic and I can be more honest and I can say the things that everyone's thinking.
I'm glad you brought up.
As can you guys, by the way. You can do the same thing. You know, no one can threaten you and say, by the way, we're going to take your jobs away because you're criticizing the Indian FA.
Yeah, the joke's on them. We don't get paid for this podcast anyway, so.
I don't get paid by the Indian FA. I don't care. When the Indian FA, I will, and this is what a lot of people don't understand about my, with regards to my views and my involvement in Indian football. I'm honest. Mm-hmm. So I will commend the Indian FA and the Ambanis when it comes to the Indian Super League for the things they do right. I will also criticize them for the things they do wrong. I'm not just constantly critical. When the Indian FA were putting the players on budget airline tickets to go and play crucial qualifiers in the build-up to the Asian Championships or the World Cup, it's a disgrace. But when the Indian FA do something good, I'll also commend them and say, well done.
All this Indian football conversation has made Karthik's ears, which made him warm. Joe, just for the context there, Karthik's been taking his coaching badges, actually, and he's done pretty well so far. I think Indian football is something he's deeply interested in.
What level are you up to, Karthik?
I just started. So at the D level, I just got cleared at that level from the AIFF. So next step is the AFC level, I think.
Well done.
Thank you.
What is it?
The advice I would give you, Karthik, is make sure you get a balance of both. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One is theory and the other is experience and practical.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't be, you know, yes, work hard at the coaching badges, but you must be getting experience. It's no good saying I've done D, C, B, A, I'm now fully qualified and I can go run Real Madrid. No, you can't.
Only Pep Guardiola went from Barcelona B to Barcelona A. Not many can do that.
Yeah, true. It's, you know, the difference in level now is can you command a dressing room? And that's why you're getting a lot of players who've come out the game recently who are going into management, because when you're standing in the middle of a bunch of egos, galacticos, you know, super millionaires, super duper millionaires, and you say you're wrong, you were the one who was at fault for that goal, they have to be able to respect you. No one in that dressing room at the Bernabeu can say to Zidane when he's digging them out, what the f*** did you do with your career? But you can say that to Jose Mourinho, and that's where Budgie's right, and that's where the crown of Jose Mourinho is starting to slip now.
I love that, especially since he's at Tottenham now.
I don't think he's going to be at Tottenham for a long time. I don't think there's too much money coming from Tottenham to Mourinho. And as Budgie rightly said, he can never win a league or a trophy without a lot of money out there. Joe, we're almost at the end of the podcast. And, you know, we keep debating amongst ourselves, amongst friends, people who we had as guests on the podcast about their top team of 11, you know, from the Premier League or from La Liga or from you know, wherever else or whatever decade. But this podcast has slightly taken a different turn, I would say. It's been more honest. And you had a good 20-odd years of career doing Premier League, La Liga, international football. I want to know from you the 11 most egoistic players that you can put on a pitch, one for each position.
Ego.
Ronaldo has a big ego. He's a fantastic player, no doubt about that. But he's extremely competitive, not in the wrong sense, you know. But who would those 11 players be? I'm sure a Paul Scholes or a Michael Carrick or you know.
So basically, Manchester United, no ego. Everyone else, very egoistic.
You got my question, right?
yeah, I did. One in every position, that's really difficult because, you know, my thinking time would be as long as this podcast has been.
Let's go with 11. Any 11 that you want to put on the team sheet.
Drogba, Ibrahimovic, Ronaldo, Gary Neville, Jens Lehmann would be my goalkeeper.
Thank God for an Austin entry in there.
Goodness me, I'm really having to think about the real ego. Ego. Oh, PK.
oh, really?
PK.
We know Joe's not getting a documentary ever.
Pogba.
Of course. Pogba. This is turning up to be a United future or current squad mostly.
Robbie Savage. How many have I got? How many is that?
About 6 to 7.
I'm sure it's about 9 or 10.
Let's go with the one last name then.
Yeah.
One last name, the biggest ego. Neymar.
Oh, of course.
How could I forget Neymar? Has to be Neymar.
I think Neymar has the unique privilege of coming on to probably every type of starting 11, you know, fantastic player 11, most egoistic 11, most injured 11, most fake 11, I'm sure.
Mm. But you see, here's the problem. I think he's overrated. He's not on the same level as Messi and Ronaldo, and I don't care what anybody says, but then that's my opinion. but what I will say, and this is, and you know, we've had this fabulous conversation over the last couple of hours about the money in the game, and I'll continue to emphasize that to your audience. You have to understand football and the way it's going to be this year, next year, 5 years from now. You have to understand the money and where it comes from. Neymar is not a great player, in my opinion. Very, very good player, but not a great player. However, any football club he joins, he brings the commercials with him.
Right.
So there's a lot of chatter amongst my friends and the Newcastle United, you know, fans, supporters, clubs, you know, what's going to happen when the Saudis come in, who are they going to buy, et cetera, et cetera. And here's the thing, you know, there's some players in that Newcastle squad are fabulous, really, really talented players and for the future as well. But they don't sell a million shirts around the world. So well, you have to think like the new owners will think, which is how do we, with a bang, establish ourselves and announce ourselves to a global football audience? How do you do that?
So Neymar to Tyneside then.
There you go.
What a marquee signing that would be.
The digital traffic of Juventus went up by 20% when Ronaldo joined. 20%.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah. I read somewhere, yeah. I think Serie A viewership went down by 20% and La Liga fell by 20%, I guess.
When LA Galaxy got Beckham, the entire MLS paid for his transfer fee.
Correct. So
but the MLS does for everyone. It's not one particular. It's a draft system there. The league.
But don't ruin my story with your facts.
But you're right, Karthik, because there's one fundamental element to that. When Beckham went to the MLS, it was still a Mickey Mouse league, and many players that were in his position, i.e., they weren't finished in their career, but they were in the twilight of their career, didn't consider it. It just wasn't an option for them to go. You know, they would go and get one more payday in the championship or something like that. Going to MLS, Beckham broke that barrier. And now you've seen Gerrard and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, to name just
Rooney.
Rooney have gone to America. Beckham made that cool. You see what I'm saying? And that's why I have a huge amount of respect for David Beckham. People that change the game, you know? So, but in terms of egos, I mean, there's not egos in the Indian national team. They're all very, very humble. And, you know, Indian players in general are very humble. Now, that goes both ways as well. There's a detriment to that. There's a downside to that because, you know, you need a certain amount of artistic arrogance, as it's called, to win games that are in the balance. And I see that amongst some of the Indian players when they are playing for the national team and coming up against some of those teams in Asia which are almost on the same level as India. You know, a game where, you know what, we might be able to get something out of this game. If you go into that match, and I'll give you in a second a great example because I watched the game. If you go into that match feeling like you're subservient, you are going to lose. It's a fact. Mm. And India did that against Bahrain in the Asian Cup last year. The game that they needed to get a draw out of to qualify for the knockout stages, they went up against Bahrain. Yeah. And I can tell that all that was in their mind was Bahrain are higher than in the rankings.
I think it was UAE, right?
Like UAE. Yeah.
No. The UAE beat them in the second.
In the second game, the one.
Second game, yeah, the one.
And that performance was brilliant. Even though they lost the game, it was brilliant. They went out there, freedom, no fear, you know, we can do this, we can do something. But in the game against Bahrain, they did the opposite. They went out and sort of went, and they went on the defensive, onto the back foot, and the rest is history. So, you know, they were always going to be knocked out by Bahrain because you can't defend for 95 minutes. It's just, you know, history will tell you and the stats will tell you that you're going to concede late in the match.
Eventually,
so,
yeah.
You know, so yes, being humble is important, but at the same time, you have to have a bit of, you have to have some confidence as well to succeed.
Yeah, I think those were the kindest words that you spoke throughout the two part series, and I'm glad they were for the Indian footballers. Yeah, that's a word of encouragement actually coming in from you, someone who follows Indian football, not just national football, but also the leagues very closely.
It comes back to the authenticity. You've got to be honest first. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And there's not enough people being honest with Indian football. And when I say honest, I mean both ways. You've got a bunch of people talking bullshit about we are going to be in the 2026 World Cup. Nonsense, the way things are going at the moment. And then you've got on the other side, another bunch of liars who are saying we're the worst team on the planet, we're shit and we're never going to win anything, we're never going to go anywhere. Both of those are lies. Mm-hmm. They're lies. You have to have an honest perspective. And the honest perspective is, the first target for Indian football, for Indian football coaches, so that's you, Carter, for players, for media, and for fans is we need to be knocking around the top 10 in Asia. There is nothing else that's important. Forget the 2026 World Cup. Forget everything else. Forget beating Nepal every single time that you play them.
Yeah. My God.
First of all, focus on becoming the top 10 in Asia. And once you get to the top 10 in Asia, and I mean your ranking, you know, it's going to go up but one or down one. What are they at the moment? 14, is it, in Asia or something like that? You know, but you might go down to 9 in Asia. You might go up to 11 in Asia. Doesn't matter. You've got to be in that zone. Focus on that and be determined about that and do everything you can to get there. And then you'll start to see the progress. Kartik, a final bit of advice for you. Get out of India at some point in your coaching career to gain experience and to learn. That is the fundamental flaw of Indian football right now. Players, coaches, Indian coaches, and referees are not getting out of India. Get out of India. The last person to go out of India to Europe on a long-term contract was Gurpreet Singh Sandhu, and he's been back in India for three years now. And he went to Norway in, what, 2012, was it?
Yeah, around that time.
2012, when they played Europa also, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
8 years ago. Where's the rest? Are you telling me that Gurpreet is the only one that can do it? No, that's nonsense. That's just not true. There's many others that can do it. They don't want to do it, right? Because they don't want to suffer for their sport, number one. Yeah. And number two, they are badly advised by others who don't want them to do it because an agent or an advisor will get more commission or more money by them staying in India. But Gurpreet told me when he started pre-season in Norway, every season for those 3 years, the average temperature was minus 15 degrees.
Wow.
Tell me how many goalkeepers in India would suffer for 3 years pre-season doing that. Not many.
Yeah, what you just said, I think I read it maybe
this week.
Novi Kapadia had a couple of things to say about why don't Indian players go and play abroad. And I think you had a part, you kind of partly agreed with what Novi Kapadia also mentioned, the fact that they're well paid here and they have a little bit of audience and fan base that they don't want to let go. And going outside, trying in Europe, even the lower leagues, is not a guarantee for success. And that's what makes them stay here.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. One is there's too much pride, and the other is financial, and we've talked about the financial already. The pride issue is a big problem because what they look at is, okay, I might go to one of the lesser European leagues, you know, such as Norway. They see it as, unless I go straight to Real Madrid because I've played for Bengaluru or I've played for ATK in India, I've got to go to Real Madrid. Unless I go to Real Madrid, I've failed. Says who?
That's not how it works for sure.
You go to, I mean, I don't know how long you've been watching Indian football, but I've been watching Indian football for a decade probably. You look at Gurpreet a decade ago to Gurpreet now. There was talent there, but oh my God, it was rough and it was raw and it was messy. You know, it was a very messy talent. His inconsistency was terrible. Terrible. Or his consistency was terrible, I think is the correct English. So his inconsistency was unbelievable is probably a better way of putting it. And Gurpreet will admit this himself. He's come back as a better player. When Gurpreet has a bad game, it's like one mistake. When any other goalkeeper in India has a bad game, it's five mistakes. That's the difference.
Yeah.
It's consistency. And you have to, and I'll say this for whatever, you know, I don't know where you guys are going to be going in life and what your ambitions and your dreams are. And I really hope, I sincerely hope you fulfill them. But you have to suffer for whatever you want to achieve. The amount of weddings that I've missed, birthdays, 21st birthdays, 30th birthdays, parties, drunk nights out, you know, because of my commitment to this cause. And it still amazes me to this day. And I'll let Manas tell you a story himself. He'll have to come back for another episode because it's you know, I wouldn't humiliate the guy by telling you the story here now. But force him to tell you the story. If you are not committed to anything, you will not succeed. My father died whilst I was on air, you know. Now, that wasn't planned or anything like that, but that's just the way it happened. And looking back now, it was good for me to slip into that zone, focus on the show, because for that show, that period of 3 hours, I was in another zone, I was in another world, and I didn't think about the death of my father. Now, I was in Dubai doing it. It was a Champions League show, actually. And there was nothing I could do about it anyway. My father was back in the UK. So what was the point at that particular stage in worrying and all the rest of it? You know, I was informed that the time was coming before I went on air. I was informed when I came off air, because at that time I never, and I still don't, switch my phone on during a show. I do it a little bit more now with social media than I did at that particular time, because this is over a decade ago. So, you know, you talk about the things that have happened. I got sued for $5 million. I got sued for $5 million.
You can't just sneak that in.
it was by 10 Sports, actually. I won my case, but I got sued for $5 million. And here's the important bit of this particular part of the story. The lawyers sent the litigation 30 minutes before I went on air in the 2014 World Cup. And they did that deliberately, because remember, it was in Brazil and the shows were late. Mm-hmm. So you tell me how many lawyers are dropping litigation at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. You know,
they did it for a specific reason, and they did it to challenge me, number one. They did it to break me, number two. And they did it because they wanted to affect my performance. Now, anybody who knows me knows that all three of those things didn't happen because it made me more determined. And that's where focus comes in, and focus on your career, focus on your life, focus on your ambition. You have to slip into that zone, and it really is a zone to say there's nothing else going on in my world right now, because A, there's nothing I can do for my father. He's 3,000 miles away. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a surgeon. I'm not a lawyer. There's nothing I can do about being dropped with a $5 million lawsuit. You know, what am I going to do? So you can either stand up to it and confront the challenge, or you can run away and hide. You know, what am I going to do? Burst into tears and say, oh, $5 million lawsuit. I'm not going on air tonight. That shows you're kind of weak, you know?
Yeah.
So many, many things have happened to me, either just before going on air or whilst I've been on air.
Joe, I have to ask you this question, and feel free to absolutely say no. I know we're almost out of time, but what was, if you can share, what were you getting sued for?
So 10 Sports, I'm talking about the old 10 Sports, when obviously in the 2014 World Cup, Sony, ESPN as they are now, they had the rights to the World Cup. They needed a presenter, and they phoned me up. I was in the UK at the time, and I said, yes, I can do it, because I was freelance. So my freelance contracts are based around rights. So I'm a broadcaster for Premier League or La Liga. So I have to commit to that league for that season, or for Champions League or whatever. That's kind of how the rights game works in terms of contracts for people like me. Some people are contracted to a broadcaster, so they do whatever sport that broadcaster does, and they just have one contract and they can't work for anybody else. Mm-hmm. So with me, with regards to that time, I had a freelance contract with 10 Sports. They were, and I just want to make clear, this is the old 10 Sports, the dickheads in Delhi. so, sorry, that might have not come across. I'll repeat, the dickheads in Delhi. So what they wanted at that time was they were dicking me around with regards to a new freelance contract. So I was out of contract at the end of the season. And then, of course, Sony came along. They said, will you do the World Cup? And it was just the World Cup. And I said, yeah, sure, no problem. There was no... The whole thing was nonsense. I even had, by the way, messages, secret messages, unbeknownst to the big power, the big powers that be, from some of the board members going, Joe, I just want to make clear, I don't approve of this. It's total nonsense. But we all have to, you know, support the main man. So so basically, they were just pissed off that I was going to work for somebody else, you know. Well, if I was so important to you, why didn't you sort my contract out? Why didn't you keep me? You know? Well, it's like being pissed off that Lionel Messi goes and plays for Real Madrid, but you were dicking him around with his contract for... the whole contract negotiation went on for 6 or 9 months before that happened. And what happened was, as soon as they dropped that litigation, I was out. And I said, I'll never work for you guys again, ever again. And I never have, and I never will. They could have the rights to the Premier League, the World Cup, the European Championships. You know, I'm a firm believer in principle, you know, because principle shows your integrity. Integrity is everything. I think it's Warren Buffett that said, all you need is, what is it, intelligence, integrity, and what's the third one? Someone will have to Google this for me.
I'm guessing authenticity.
No, it's another I. But he basically says, if you don't have integrity, the other two are not important. So integrity is everything. And then they came back to me and said, you know, this was the following season, right, will you re-sign for us? What?
Not a very smart move then.
You know, this could make a whole podcast episode, the summer transfer saga of Joe Morrison.
We need to YouTube this for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, look, don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, the process of going through a legal case, especially when you've been sued for $5 million. By the way, I don't know if I can show it. No, the room's dark. I've actually taken the pages of the original litigation, the original lawsuit, and I framed it, and it's in my toilet. So where it shows 5 million, because all I want is everyone that comes in my house talks. That goes in. It's the guest toilet, by the way. Everyone that comes in my house, you know, talks about it, and they
smart,
say
very smart.
And the way I look at it is, someone at some point in my career valued me at $5 million. You know, so but the point I want to make about it is, it's very tough as an individual going against an organization, you know, and they didn't care about it. Every single person that was on the other side of that fight was going home at nighttime, and they didn't care about it because they, as individuals, you know, that's why you have limited liability. They, as individuals, were not being sued by Joe Morrison because obviously I countersued them. So they didn't care. But as an individual, and now looking back, I didn't feel it at the time because, you know, I'll not deny it. It was stressful in certain parts. At the beginning, it was stressful. But then as I got more into it, it became like a game, you know, it became like a competition, like a football match. And, you know, it's then a power of wills. So, and I knew I was going to win. So, you know, going against an organization is really tough. And anyone who's been in litigation, and you know what India's like, it's the global center of litigation. So
don't say that.
doing that kind of thing is challenging and it's difficult. But now when I look back, honestly, it's one of the best things that happened in my career because it taught me a lot about resilience. And I now know if I ever met any of those protagonists on the other side, and I'm not going to name them, but they know who they are. If I ever met any of those protagonists on the other side, I know I could look them in the eye, and I know by just one look for 30 seconds, I could have them shitting themselves because I know that's how mentally weak they are because of that process that we went through. You know, they were cowards. You see what I'm saying? It's one thing sending me a message saying we support you, Joe. It's another thing actually standing up for me. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I learned a lot about resilience from that particular experience. And I'll never forget one character in particular who I had a meeting with him in his office, one of the executive management at Ten Sports at that time. And this is how I know about weak, mentally weak people. He was wearing a suit. And this was one of the first things I noticed when I went into the room. He was wearing a suit where the jacket and the trousers were slightly different. So obviously you got up that morning and thought, well, you know, these trousers maybe need to be cleaned and nobody will notice those trousers, because one had a tiny fine pinstripe in the jacket, but the trousers had no pinstripe. It wasn't, by the way, don't get me wrong, it wasn't a blazer and trousers, you know, an obvious difference.
Yeah, it's the
same
suit.
Color. It was the same color, but you could tell the material was slightly different. Obviously, one had a pinstripe, one didn't.
The devil is in the details, Joe.
Eh?
The devil's in
exactly,
the
details. Exactly. And when I'm training presenters, young presenters now, I do a little bit of training for young upcoming talent. I always ask them to, when their guest walks into the room, within seconds, maximum 1 minute, you should have looked at the shoes, looked at every single detail of that person from top to bottom, because it then gives you an understanding of who you're dealing with. Because some people, I've seen people wear Rolex watches, sharp suit, and really cheap shoes. Mm-hmm. So it tells me that they're not, their thinking as a person is not immaculate from top to bottom. They will let holes appear in their life, in their business, in their everyday workings. Does that make sense?
Wow. Yeah. Went from footballing lessons to life lessons really quickly.
Sorry, I didn't really get onto that conversation.
It reminds me of something that someone had once told me, is that the way you do something is the way you do everything. Very nice. So I think this goes along with that.
And if you're young, how old each of you guys are. If you're young, you have to suffer and you have to lose a few in your early days of your career. But make sure when you're losing those things that you think you should win, make sure you're losing it for the reason of integrity, nothing else. Yeah. So if you're letting something go, you're letting something slide, or you're losing out on something, make sure you lose out on it because you kept your integrity. And the person who got the job, who got the opportunity, they let their integrity go. By the way, I can see Karthik bouncing around because he's desperate to go to the toilet. So am I. He's exactly the same as me. I'm twitching here.
I don't think Karthik's twitching to go to the washroom. I think he just wants to light a cigarette.
No, but, I know I said no to that 1 minute break and I'm regretting it now.
Just go by Joe's advice. You have to lose some things to gain some more things.
Wait, sorry. I will have to call time because my computer is already running out of battery. I don't want to not have this recording on my computer. So bring it home.
No, I'm going to bring it home now.
And the toilet door is calling my name over there. I can see it. If it was not able to see it, it would not be a problem, but it's calling my... It's looking at me now. Calm, Joe. Calm.
There's a suit addressed to you here in the toilet.
We are not going to come in between that door and you right now. Thank you for sharing that story. It was something very personal and we're very, very fortunate to be the ones to hear it from you. And three of us at least definitely know that bit, that legal or the lawsuit didn't affect you during the 2014 World Cup as much as England's performance at the World Cup did.
So
thank you. There was a lot in these two episodes, right? There was a special advice for Karthik on what it should do with his coaching career. There was life advice for Shiva and I and for our listeners. But the most important advice I got from these two parts is if you're carrying tea from India, especially to Dubai, ensure you have some amount of labeling on that. Otherwise it's not a good idea. But thank you, Joe. This was fantastic. You were very honest.
Okay.
Extremely authentic. It was not just a word that you used, the stories that you told us and the anecdotes.
Don't forget that word. If you're in broadcasting for the rest of your career, don't forget that word. It's so important. Oh, and by the way, Ramadan Mubarak to those who are celebrating.
Yeah. Happy Ramadan to everyone.
Happy Ramadan to everybody. Hope you have a great time during this lockdown. I hope you find other ways of dealing with so much time on your hand in the absence of live football. Hope you're on with your exercises and that your family is also doing well.
Thank you.
Joe, a lot of people already do get in touch with you, but somebody who's listening to this episode and wants to reach out to you for some certain questions that they have, where can they reach you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Footy, obviously. You know what? I get stopped in airports and people think my surname is actually Footy. They come up to me, shake my hand and say, Mr. Joe Footy. So Joe Footy on Twitter, one, as in the word one, Joe Footy on Instagram. And if you want to watch all of the nonsense that me, Budgie and Kevin get up to, then go to Foreign Fields on Facebook.
Now you know where to reach out to
I'm not Joe. I'm not on TikTok or Snapchat or any of those things that the cool kids
are Which is
on.
Not a bad thing at all, Joe.
Yeah, I don't think it goes along well with your authenticity thing. that particular platform. But who knows? Today we have Facebook showing matches. Tomorrow that could be TikTok doing other things. We never know where life is going to take us. Thank you, Joe, again, from the three of us and from all the listeners here and from IVM, who is hosting this podcast. We hope to see you soon on television or on our phones. Small, big screens, anything would do. We hope football is back. We hope Newcastle gets the money. We hope they buy some great players, and we hope they at least finish ahead of Arsenal, which is not the most difficult thing to do.
Thanks.
On your phone, iPhone SE, I've got. I love these small phones. Why do phones keep getting bigger? The small phones are the best phones.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
So if you like this podcast, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can listen to us on the IVM Podcast app or ivmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are at IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to reach out to me, I'm Fickleberry Hun on Twitter and Instagram. That's Huckleberry Finn, but fickle.
And if you want to reach out to me, I am Sapre on Twitter and GSapre on Instagram.
You can reach out to me at iRant, which is IYERANT on Twitter and Instagram. This is Football Should Ball. Recognize.